From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, an interview in concert with a great quirky pianist and composer who isn't nearly as well known as he ought to be, Joel Forrester. Name sound familiar? You hear it a lot on Fresh Air. Joel composed Fresh Air's theme music and recorded it with the group he co-founded, the late great Microscopic Septet. Now he has his first solo piano CD, Stop the Music. A concert and interview with Joel Forrester coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Dave Mattingly. It's been a busy day in space for two cosmonauts who are working to restore power to the damaged Spectre module aboard the Russian space station Mir. So far, they've managed to hook up some power cables linking three solar panels to a computer. That job took about 4 hours. It also drew a round of cheers from ground controllers in Moscow. The cosmonauts must still attach a cable to a hatch door. Astronaut David Wolf is standing by in an escape module should problems develop aboard Spectre. That module was damaged 5 months ago when a Russian supply ship slammed into it during a docking try. Israel has decided that a teenager wanted for murder in Maryland is not an Israeli citizen and may be extradited to the U.S. UPI's Dana Carl has more.
Under strong pressure from the United States and congressional threats to hold aid to Israel, Israel's attorney general has decided to extradite a Maryland teenager wanted for murder. House Appropriations Committee Chair Bob Livingston says it's a step in the right direction.
The Israeli government has acted in good faith. They've recognized, as I do, that this kid is a 17-year-old youngster who obviously had never stepped foot in Israel until recently and has no real claim.
17-year-old murder suspect Samuel Sheinbein is accused of murdering, dismembering, and burning the body of Alfredo Tail Jr. of Montgomery County, Maryland. Sheinbein fled to Israel, claiming protection as the son of an Israeli citizen. Sheinbein's attorneys will appeal the decision. Dana Carl, Washington.
Montenegro Prime Minister Milo Djukanovic has won his republic's presidency. It was a triumph for economic reformers over ex-communists loyal to Yugoslav President Slobodan Milosevic. Leon Martindale reports.
The capital in the Yugoslav Republic of Montenegro has been erupting an all-night celebration over Milo Djukanovic's expected victory in presidential elections. With nearly all the votes counted, Djukanovic edged out incumbent President Momir Bilatovic by a little over 6,000 votes. While the tiny Republic of Montenegro is less than one-tenth the size of its partner Serbia, Montenegro and Djukanovic could be the biggest rival Milosevic has yet faced. Reformer Djukanovic has openly criticized Milosevic as an outdated dinosaur whose policies have crippled the economy and isolated the country. Final results expected later this evening are a mere formality, and Djukanovic's spokeswoman has asked Bulatovic to accept defeat. Bulatovic has made no public appearance or issued any official statement. For National Public Radio, this is Leon Martindale in Podgorica.
The Federal Maritime Commission has postponed a decision on whether to formally lift a ban on most Japanese ships at U.S. ports. That word comes from Commission Chairman Harold Creel. He says the delay is pending the outcome of ongoing talks between the two countries. On Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up nearly 13 points at 7859.80. The Nasdaq is up nearly 17 points. This is NPR. The stock market is gaining some ground on the first trading day of the week. Bloomberg's Paul Lynn reports.
There has been some strength among long-distance telecom stocks, led by gains in AT&T, up roughly 5% on word that it has finally chosen a new chairman to succeed Robert Allen, who leaves the company November 1st. Computer system stocks also are trading higher ahead of IBM's earnings report. Big Blue is expected to report third-quarter profit at $1.37 a share after the close of trading today. Another key earnings report comes from Microsoft. It's expected to report earnings of 70 cents a share, and ahead of that report, shares of software companies are on the rise as well. Offsetting the advance in stocks, weakness in the retail sector, and among interest-sensitive issues like banks. This is Paul Lynn.
Hilton Hotels has failed in its effort to acquire ITT. Starwood Lodging is buying ITT for $13.3 billion. That thwarts Hilton's $8.3 billion hostile takeover bid. The combination of ITT and Starwood creates the world's largest luxury hotel company that will have 650 hotels in 70 countries. Among the hotel chains to be under the new company umbrella will be Sheraton, Caesars, Westin, Ritz, and Marriott. Plans have been announced for the world's largest accounting and consulting firm. KPMG and Ernst & Young say they're merging to form a company with annual revenues topping $18 billion. It will have more than 160,000 employees. The merger follows one announced several weeks ago by rivals Coopers & Lybrand and Price Waterhouse. Analysts say the mergers by corporate accounting firms have been triggered by rising costs and competition. I'm Dave Mattingly, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from Borders Books and Music, putting a world of knowledge within your reach, with over 170 locations across America. 800-644-7733.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by Barnes & Noble, booksellers since 1873, and by the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. I'm often asked, who wrote the theme music for our show? Another question I often get is, who does that oddball music that we hear in between interviews, music like this? The answer to both of those musical questions is my guest, Joel Forrester. Joel composed the music we just heard and several other compositions we frequently play on Fresh Air. He also composed the Fresh Air theme music. He co-founded the band, the Microscopic Septet, which made several albums before they split up. Now Joel has a new band called People Like Us, which has just released its first CD. And he has his first solo piano CD, which features many of his original compositions, including this solo version of the Fresh Air theme. Joel Forrester's new solo CD is called Stop the Music. It's a co-production of Fresh Air and Koch Records. We invited Joel to our studio to play and talk about his music. Joel, welcome back to Fresh Air. It's really fun to have you here. A pleasure to have you back. I want you to start with a piece that I think just shows off what you can really do in your right hand and your left hand and shows off how you combine really exciting sounds from early jazz and from really contemporary jazz and put it all together. The piece is called Fate.
You know, it's kind of you to mention my active and heavy left hand. You know, I will issue a little internal prayer before we play that I'm able to coordinate the two of them.
Okay.
Thank you.
That's good. I should mention that that tune, the way you played it, actually used the bottom note on the piano. How often do you get to play that note?
I
How
was
often
aiming
is that note
for
in tune when you use it?
That's true.
That's great. Joel, what did you really gravitate to first in music? The more contemporary or avant-garde sound, or like the early ragtime and boogie-woogie sound, what did you discover first?
I think that I came to both those musics about the same time, Terry, to tell you the truth.
That's interesting, because a lot of people see them as being kind of opposite ends. You know, you have to reject one and choose the other.
Well, there was an important musical figure who took me both ways at the same time when I was 20, a fellow named Howard Vidal, who played gut bucket trombone, sort of after the manner of Kid Ory, and also played avant-garde bass in his own way. And he hipped me to Johnny Dodds and King Oliver, Jelly Roll Morton, other figures from that time, turn of the century, and for maybe the next 25 years, people played that sort of music, New Orleans music. And at the same time, then he made me aware of the new, very energetic music coming out of New York and other places that wasn't tonally based. I heard both those things at the same time. And it's funny, Terry, I went through an odd period where I tried to play like atonal avant-garde ragtime, stuff like
that.
And then I guess that mostly, I finally found a use for that. You know, I play a little bit of that when I accompany silent films.
I think another formative experience when you were young is you were a draft resister and you spent a few months in prison.
That's correct.
And I'm wondering what effect that had on you musically. Did you hear anything? Were you exposed to anything inside that you wouldn't have heard outside? I know there's a lot of radio listening in prison. I don't know.
Well, there
any
was
other musicians there.
Yeah, there was a Pittsburgh radio station called WAMO, WAMO. It wasn't broadcast. Many of the prisoners would yell for WAMO, would yell WAMO, which really confused people coming in from other places besides Pittsburgh. I know. I wish we could have listened to WAMO, but instead there was a very loud, easy listening music given to us. That was supposed to pacify us. Of course, it had the opposite result. What did it do for me? Well, one thing was, I would say, give me a lifelong antipathy to music that was supposed to affect me emotionally.
Oh, yeah. Well, that easy. It's insipid.
I think so.
I've worked in places where, you know, early on in my professional life, I've worked in places where there was music and, you know, piped in music, and it would drive me crazy. I couldn't turn it off mentally. Did you go nuts?
Well, you know, the odd thing with me, I guess this is something that's problematical with me, but anytime I have to learn music that didn't sort of come through my channels first, it sticks with me far longer. Once in San Francisco, when I and my family were out of pocket, I remember having to take a gig at a small girls' school playing the music to a show called Pippin. And, you know, and I can probably still remember each of those tunes. That was in 1971.
I want you to play another piece for us, another one of your original compositions that another really up-tempo, kind of boogie influence kind of piece that you wrote.
One?
And this is called Snuggle Bunnies.
Ah, cool.
Would you say something about writing it?
Well, Snuggle Bunnies is a two-beat tune. That's one that goes like, as opposed to the four-beat one, a four-beat kind of tune that comes in with bebop, this, that kind of rhythm. So this is a two-beat tune. The title relates to an Arcane Forester childhood bedroom custom, and in which all members, all my siblings, kick the weakest one out of bed. At times, I was the weakest one, but now I've written the tune. Thank you.
I love it.
Thanks, Terry.
Jill Forrester's new solo piano CD is called Stop the Music. We'll hear more of the concert and interview after a break. This is Fresh Air. I think what gives us the most pleasure at Fresh Air is presenting incredibly talented people like Jill Forrester, who aren't nearly as well known as they ought to be. We think he's great, and that's why we commissioned him to write our theme music. Before we get back to the concert, we're going to ask you to call with a pledge to support Fresh Air and all the programs you enjoy. Back to our concert and interview with composer and pianist Jill Forrester. We've been talking a little bit about some of the influences on your playing, and I think one of the greatest influences was the influence of Thelonious Monk.
Oh, that goes without saying.
Yeah, and I'm wondering what it was like when you first heard him. A lot of people hear his dissonances, or particularly when he first started playing, a lot of people heard his dissonances as mistakes, as wrong notes,
mm-hmm.
as something that didn't sound right.
His jazz was just about the first I ever heard.
Oh.
It sounded exotic to me, but I got used to it very quickly. You know, I mean, there is just something very beautiful in, for example, this sound. You know, a monk sound that may be thought of as a dissonance, but it certainly has a lot to do for me with a beautiful melody, just beautiful melody. And something else, you know, he uses a lot of what in musical terms would be called minor seconds. If you play it really softly, then it's just more like a murmur because the two notes beat against each other.
You are, I think, one of the few musicians of your generation who was lucky enough not only to be influenced by Thelonious Monk, but to have met him and spent some time for him.
That's true, I'm that old.
And had the chance to play for him.
Yes.
Tell us how you met him.
Well, you know, once I finally got introduced to him by the Baroness Pannonica, de Koenigswarter, who was his great friend.
And she was a jazz patron. She
helped keep alive several jazz artists. That's right, and certainly had the largest ears of anyone in terms of being able to hear music, you know,
mm-hmm.
and she would invite me to her bizarre palatial pad in Weehawken, where Monk more or less lay in state, full set of clothes, in a day bed that was just as big as the room, and no bigger, and with a piano right outside. And then it was, I think, the Baroness's hope that in hearing me play his tunes and in my own way, that Monk might come out and correct me, and it might lead him to play piano more often, because at that time, Monk was only rising from his bed to play the odd concert, and then he would go back to bed.
So when you were playing and he was just lying in bed in another room, did he respond to you at all?
Well, yes. You see, the piano was right next to that room, Terry. I was right on the other side of the door, and so if he liked what I played, he would keep the door open. If he didn't, he would kick it closed. And I realized about the second time that I played for him, these were like 2 or 3 hour sessions, I realized, I think, in the middle of the second time that I was receiving lessons when he would open and close the door 10 or 12 times in an hour.
What did he like?
Well, he didn't like my interpretations of his music, that's for sure. I got the slam there.
Oh.
He enjoyed the fact that I had picked up from him an ability to not to rely on rubato, but to always play in time in some way or other.
Rubato means out of tempo.
That's right, because Monk seldom uses it. He also only used pedal for specific effects. I try to do the same thing, try and let the playing carry the time forward. I hope that he also liked the fact that I tried to express the time that I feel in everything that I play.
When do you use the pedal?
Well, when I'm playing something that involves like a smear of notes, and I want it to last a while, but it takes up too much space for my hands really to stay on the keys, or I want to move on and play something different, then I'll use the pedal. Sometimes I also like to try in a monk-type way to bend a note. That's something to drag these guys back in. I also hear from not only the Second Viennese School, but from Charles Ives. He'll lay out a big chord and have it reduced to something small, like this.
That's interesting. A kind of reductionist approach.
Yeah, that's right.
That's very interesting. Play us a composition, if you would, that you think is inspired by
Monk. You know, Terry, have we ever discussed this piano player in exile from New York, Bob Montalto? Mentioned him. He's a guy who sometimes whose music we used in the Microscopic Septet. Good friend of mine. He pointed out to me that when I wrote a tune called Gone Tomorrow, that obviously I'd been listening a lot to Monk's most famous composition, Round Midnight. Let me play you the signature riff from Round Midnight. And then this is Gone Tomorrow. Thanks, Terry.
Joel Forrester's new solo piano CD is Stop the Music. I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air, and this is NPR, National Public Radio. Coming up, more of our concert and interview with Joel Forrester. He just released his first solo piano CD, Stop the Music, which includes a solo version of the Fresh Air theme, which he composed. Joel co-founded the quirky band The Microscopic Septet, which we're listening to now.
Support for Fresh Air is provided by the George Gund Foundation and the National Endowment for the Arts. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with more of our concert and interview with Joel Forrester. He co-founded the late, great Microscopic Septet, and he composed Fresh Air's theme music. Now he has his first solo piano CD. It's called Stop the Music. He also has a new CD featuring his new band, People Like Us. We've been hearing some great originals of yours, haunting melodies, monk-inspired music, boogie-woogie. I think what listeners are really wondering right now is, tell us the story of the theme to Fresh Air. I want to remind our listeners that one of the things you are responsible for is our theme, which I still love after hearing it thousands, probably literally thousands and thousands of times. And I want to explain why we asked you to write the theme in the first place, because Danny Miller and I, you know, commissioned you to write it. We just loved your playing and loved the kind of thing we've been talking about here, this mix of very contemporary music and the kind of mayhem and frivolity of really early jazz. And we wanted our theme to kind of have that sense of fun and also have the depth that your music has.
Hey, folks out there, don't you wish that you had Terry Gross in your personal life to just take your thoughts and conceptualize them for you and then put them in articulate terms?
Anyways.
Mayhem, eh?
So you sent us a sketch of the theme, the first version of the theme.
Good thing she remembers this.
And I loved it, but my personal reaction was, it maybe sounds a little bit like the theme to a detective show. Maybe sounds a little too hard-boiled.
Hard-boiled, right.
Play that first version of the theme for us.
Avec plaisir.
Am I supposed to say, first the news now?
Go ahead.
Well, I love that version when you sent it to us. My personal feelings, though, was that it might sound a little too much like a detective theme and that our listeners might think I was going to shoot our guests instead of interviewing them.
It's so possible.
So we asked you for a slight revision, and you wrote what I think you named and has since become known in the Fresh Air office as The Happy Twin. It was, I guess, a more major key version of it.
Yes, it's slightly more ebullient. It's more of a lark, I think.
Play us a few bars of the Happy Twin version of the theme.
Okay.
Yeah, and so we got that, and what we did was, for listeners who've always wondered about this, we played the Happy Twin version first, and then when listeners got acquainted with that, we worked in the hard-boiled version, mm-hmm. which is the version we've kind of preferred all along.
That's a
even
good
though
strategy.
Yeah, we just thought it might be a little much at first. I should mention that you play a solo version of the hard-boiled version of the Fresh Air theme on your new solo CD.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Which is called Stop the Music.
That's right. Well, it's a jolly hard-boiled version. Let's put it that way.
Because we're always getting people who say, where can I get the theme?
That's right. There it is.
Joel, you mostly play originals. I very rarely, if ever, hear you play tunes by
that's
anybody
true.
Else.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on a lot of gigs, you are expected to play cover versions of either the latest rock and roll hits or of jazz standards, depending on what the date is.
True.
And I imagine you've gotten a lot of pressure on some dates to just play familiar Monk and Miles tunes.
Well, you know, I really am pretty lucky, you know, in that it turns out that a lot of my music sounds like someone else must have composed it somewhere along the line. And so it's true that when I audition for a gig, I inevitably play my own music and then just let the chips fall. But often the chips are deceitful, because the club owner will hear the music and be under the misapprehension that one of my ballads was penned by Harold Arlen, say, someone like that, you know. And then that's fine with me. Then I just continue. For example, there's this one little tune I have called Like the End of a Movie. It goes like this. And like that. And I can play that just about anywhere and confuse everyone.
As we were saying, you know, you play mostly originals, and you were pointing out how your originals seem to evoke other songs for people.
That's right.
And I think an example of that is a song I'm going to ask you to play now called Imaginary Paris.
Mm.
And the first time I heard this, I kept thinking, oh, what is this bringing back? What is this reminding me of? And it wasn't a particular tune. It was more of, I think, the kind of thing I once heard on a music box that was a very nostalgic, actually French
mm-hmm.
song. But it did have the sense of me thinking, just like wrestling through the files in my mind, thinking, what what is this reminding of, and why is it getting to me like
this? Makes me happy to hear that, Terry.
So maybe you could play Imaginary Paris for us. And this shows off just a very wistful side of your playing.
Mm.
That's really beautiful. Somebody, I don't know who, once called irony the 20th century illness.
I doubt it.
And it seems to me in your playing, Joel, that when you want to, you could be really witty and ironic, but you're also capable, as in that piece that you just played for us, of just being really emotional. I mean, and
I try to be true to the music I'm playing.
Yeah.
Truly. That's what it is.
My guest is pianist and composer Joel Forrester. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back to our concert and interview with pianist and composer Joel Forrester. He has a new solo piano CD called Stop the Music. It features the Fresh Air theme, which he composed. You've played a lot of solo dates.
Oh, yeah.
Over the years.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have a piece that you consider the piece that is the most readily accessible, that even if people aren't paying attention, they'll stop when you play this?
That's very funny, Terry, because I have a piece that not only arrests attention, not only brings some people in, but also equally repels people at the same time. Sometimes exactly the same people in different moods.
Oh, well, now you have to play a little bit of it.
Just a little bit of it, because as you might guess, it's my tune Industrial Arts, which in its full form is an 8-hour piece. And, you know, I don't think Danny Miller will sit still for that. Will you, Danny?
This is your repetitive piece.
Yes, it's very repetitive. And in fact, when I played it in about 1974, when it was first got together in a bar, I am ashamed to say that I hid under the piano when the cook came out of the kitchen holding a frying pan. Now, all she wanted to show me was that the repetitive character of this music had caused her to burn herself in the kitchen. She wanted to show me that, but I just saw a furious woman with a frying pan, and I did cower behind the keys.
So you're just going to play 2 hours of this for us, right?
Thank you. More like, I'd say, 30 seconds. How's
that? That's good. That's good.
You'll get the idea. In a sense, it's like being in jail, you know? I mean, once you're there, it doesn't matter how long. You know what, Terry? Let me play the greatest moments from the 8-hour version.
Great,
okay, so that's the intro. That goes on for about half an hour, and then there's this. And then eventually there's like a change. It's really wild. It's something like this. Let's see if I can just dip into it. Okay, is that enough?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's playing Joel. No, I like that. We know what it did to the cook at the bar. What did it do to you to have to play that long?
I don't remember. Well, actually, I only played it for 8 hours once.
Uh-huh.
And I thought that maybe about the fourth or fifth hour, I might start to play something unrecognizable on it. And I may well have. I don't remember.
Well, Joel, we are sadly just about out of time. I've really enjoyed hearing you play, and you have so many compositions I've never heard that I really hope I get to hear.
Thanks, Terry.
Sometime. And I'd like you to close with one of your own compositions that's actually the title track of your new solo CD.
Okay.
And the piece is called Stop the Music.
That's right.
So anything you want to say about it before you play it?
About this tune? Stop the Music is an elderly tune in my repertoire, and that requires me to sort of think twice constantly. And I enjoy playing it, and I'm going to think about you while I play it, Terry.
You're going to think twice about me.
Well...
Joel, that was great. I want to thank you so much for doing this concert for us.
Oh, it's been wonderful to be here. It's always good to see you, Terry.
Joel Forrester's new solo piano CD is called Stop the Music. It's a co-production of Fresh Air and Koch Records. This is Fresh Air. I guess there are two themes to today's Fresh Air. The Fresh Air theme music, composed by today's guest, Joel Forrester, and the theme of the fundraiser, which is, we need your financial support. Please call now with a pledge. Thank you. One thing composer and saxophonist Ornette Coleman is known for is rarely working with piano players. Their chords tend to get in the way of his free-floating improvising. But Coleman plays with pianists on each of his two new CDs. Kevin Whitehead has a review of Coleman's new CD with pianist Jerry Allen, and this one with Joachim Kuhn. Thank you.
One jazz pianist I know tells a story on himself, of following Ornette Coleman around in the 1970s, bugging the saxophonist to let him play with him. Now, this guy is a very good piano player, but Ornette always put him off, politely but firmly. By my count, till now, Coleman has recorded with only 5 pianists: Paul Blay, Walter Norris, Cedar Walton, David Bryant, and Jerry Allen. Now, 40 years after he started making records, he seems to be getting over his aversion. Coleman guests on 2 tracks from Jerry Allen's latest CD, a set of duos and trios called Eyes in the Back of Your Head. Ornette Coleman and his critics often give you the impression his music is more mysterious than it is. Folks say his tunes have no chords, but that's not really true. His bluesy melodies have a fixed form, and they imply certain chords, like most any jazz or pop song. The difference is, when Ornette improvises on a tune, he may wander off the chords, or jump to another key, or stretch or shorten the form. Many of his tunes have such weird turns already built in, so it all fits together. Even when he's free improvising with Jerry Allen, he takes little motifs, some borrowed from his own tunes, and twists them this way or that. Jazz piano players are usually expected to lead the soloist a little, to outline the chords as they come up. That won't work with Ornette, so in a way, pianists have to rethink their instrument. Jerry Allen has more practical experience playing with Ornette than almost any piano player, but sometimes she still sounds like she's waiting for him to make the first move. At other times, they dance so well, you lose track of who's leading. That was Ornette Coleman with his regular pianist, Jerry Allen. Coleman and Germany's Joachim Kuhn made their duo CD, called Colors, at only their 2nd concert together. In many ways, Kuhn is a more conventional pianist, but somehow this duo sounds both more secure and more reckless. Kuhn uses a lot of the same tactics that Jerry Allen does: bass lines, loose counterpoint, and lots of chords. He also plays strong rhythmic patterns, almost like drum parts. The logic seems to be, if the rhythm is right, whatever notes Coleman blows over the top will fit it. Kuhn is also wise enough to keep Ornette out front so he can all soak up that beautiful Texas blues sound. Joachim Kuhn says working with Coleman has been a long-time dream, and you can bet he spent some time dreaming up what he'd do if he ever got the chance. Some folks still insist Ornette is avant-garde, quote-unquote, but come on. He's been making records since the 50s, and as you can hear, he has his favorite licks, like most improvisers. Pianists would have to be a bit dim not to cotton to his method by now. One nice thing about the Ornette Coleman-Joachim Kuhn duo is how normal it sounds. Plus, you get to hear a whole barrel full of Ornette.
Jazz critic Kevin Whitehead reviewed two new CDs featuring Ornette Coleman, Colors and Eyes in the Back of Your Head. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. The recording engineer for our concert with Joel Forrester was Joyce Lieberman. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Roberta Schurach directs the show. I'm Terry Gross. We'll close with a song from guitarist and singer John Pizzarelli and his new CD, Our Love Is Here to Stay. Later this week, we'll feature a concert and interview with John Pizzarelli. He recently performed in a Broadway review saluting the songs of Johnny Mercer, including this song, Dream.
Get in touch with that sundown fellow as he tiptoes across the sand. He's got a million kinds of stardust. Pick your favorite brand and dream when you're feeling blue. Dream, that's the thing to do. Smoke rings rise in the air. You'll find your share of memories there. So dream when the day is through. Dream and they might come true. Things never are as bad as so dream, dream, dream. We're singing and swinging out a little tune in honor of a gent named Johnny Mercer. He wrote so many of our popular songs, he's everybody's favorite verser.
This is NPR, National Public Radio.